Greetings.
Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. We return now to Nick Curto Presents Connecting the Dots with Mary Jo Fahey. Greetings, Nick and Mary Jo.
Hey, thanks very
Hi,
much.
Dear.
Good to be with you as always, Hercules. You're the best producer in the business as far as I'm concerned.
Thank you. And I'm looking forward to tonight's show.
Okay, here we go then. The program again is Nick Curto Presents Connecting the Dots. I'm Nick Curto, your co-host, along with...
I'm Mary Jo Fahey, your other co-host. Together, Nick and I founded Disclosure Network New York. DNNY is a grassroots organization now celebrating our 20th year of providing two meetings a month throughout the year. We've had to stop our meetings in person, face-to-face, in Manhattan, since the venue we had been using closed due to COVID-19. Until the venue reopens, we now produce all of our meetings on Zoom for our supportive DNNY members.
Our Zoom meetings are held on the first and third Wednesday nights from 7 p.m., to 8:30 p.m., that's Eastern Standard Time, each month throughout the year. And if you'd like the details and to become a supportive member, and we would love you to do that, I'm going to give you my email address. And if you have a pen or a piece of paper handy, go slow so you get it. Okay, here we go. N-I-C-K-N-Y-N-Y. One, and that's the numeral one, not O-N-E, the numeral one, at gmail.com. Again, N-I-C-K-N-Y-N-Y-1 at gmail.com.
Our motto right from day one is connecting the dots to seek truth. We focus on cutting-edge UFO ET issues, paranormal phenomena, as well as many important and related subjects from a wide variety of areas and sources, going deep into these exciting and sometimes misunderstood areas that the mainstream corporate press will very seldom talk about or disclose. In other words, who or what is behind the curtain?
Our members do intensive, investigative, deep research into these various topics and share that information with our group at the meetings twice a month. Also, for our internet followers, we have our website, and that is www.dnny.info, again, dnny.info, as well as our YouTube account. Both carry our recorded DNNY programs, and it's a great way to catch up on a meeting if you've missed it.
We also have available to our DNNY members worldwide a daily news blast email service focusing on the most important topics of special interest. By becoming a DNNY member, you will then be connected to our other members receiving cutting-edge daily news that has never been more intense than right now, plus our meeting announcement details, as well as invitations to special events year-round.
Okay, let's get right to it. Mary Jo, please tell our listeners what tonight's program is all about.
Tonight's topic is nanomedicine, the third show in a series of podcasts about nanotechnology. Nanoparticles are a thread that can be traced back to our March 2020 podcast, which was part one of our show on artificial intelligence. In that show, we talked about the Platonic solids that Plato mentioned in 350 BC. The solids include the tetrahedron that exists in nature, the cube that exists in nature, the octahedron that exists in nature, the dodecahedron that does not exist in nature, and the icosahedron that does not exist in nature. Nanoparticles can be dodecahedron or icosahedron. According to a website called understandingnano.com, Nanotechnology in medicine involves applications of nanoparticles currently under development or, pardon me, as well as longer range research that involves the use of manufactured nanorobots to make repairs at the cellular level, sometimes referred to as nanomedicine. Nanobacteria were identified in the 1980s but were later discredited as lumps of limestone. An April 17, 2008 article that appeared in Nature magazine titled Nanobacteria Theory Takes a Hit describes the details. The Wikipedia page for nanoviruses describes them as icosahedral. When you type the words icosahedral viruses into Google, a link to a page titled Viruses with Icosahedral Capsids, published at the University of Hamburg, is returned. The author writes, among the small icosahedral viruses are well-known human or animal pathogens causing poliomyelitis, cold, which is the rhinovirus, hepatitis, foot and mouth disease, or a variety of enteric diseases. Plant pathogens like the rice yellow mottle virus destroy region-wide a year's harvest. Our first podcast on January 2, 2020 included research about a real biblical flood. I mentioned author William Bramley's book, Gods of Eden. The book is about an extraterrestrial race that is trying to kill us. Bramley found evidence that ETs were behind the Black Death in the 14th century, and he mentions the Spanish flu of 1918 that infected 500 million and killed 50 to 100 million. Modern scientists know that a virus called H1N1 caused the Spanish flu of 1918, and that it is associated with an H1N1 that infected 61 million people in 2009. When I typed H1N1 icosahedral into Google, a link to an August 23, 2016 paper titled Geometry of the Structure of Viruses was returned. The paper was written by the research director at the Scientific Research National Center in Paris named Michelle Deza. In her paper, she lists viruses as dodecahedral and icosahedral, identifying H1N1 and HIV as examples. To find her paper, Google Geometry of the Structure of Viruses ResearchGate. In a July 2012 paper titled HIV-1, Assembly, Budding, and Maturation, published in a journal called Cold Spring Harbor Perspectives in Medicine, scientists at the University of Utah School of Medicine describe HIV-1 capsids as geometric structures called fullerene cones. A capsid is the protein shell of a virus particle surrounding its nucleic acid, and a fullerene is a nanoparticle. The various shapes of nanoparticles appear in a diagram that was published in a January 28, 2013 paper titled Influence of Nanomorphology on the Melting and Catalytic Properties of Convex Polyhedral Nanoparticles, found in a publication called Journal of Nanoparticle Research. The authors have made the diagram available for downloading. Google shapes of nanoparticles considered in this paper. In an August 25, 2020 paper titled Geometric Architecture of Viruses, published in a journal called World Journal of Virology, a scientist at the King Sayed University College of Pharmacy in Saudi Arabia mentions COVID-19 in the first paragraph. He describes virus structure as geometric, including spherical, polyhedral, elliptical, rod-like, and pleomorphic, which refers to a shape that changes. Figure 3 in the paper includes the drawings of the platonic solids that the author refers to as geometric solids. This paper is also archived in the U.S. National Library of Medicine's PubMed Medline database. What can we conclude from these scientific papers that describe the geometry of viruses? The University of Hamburg identified a few of the world's worst viruses as icosahedral, including those that cause poliomyelitis, the cold, hepatitis, foot and mouth disease. There are three more famous viruses that may be considered the worst in human history: H1N1, HIV, and COVID-19. Google returned scientific papers that describe these as icosahedral and dodecahedral, the two platonic solids that do not exist in nature. These are artificial constructs that are produced mathematically. Information about nanotechnology has been available since the late 1980s. In 1986, an engineer named K. Eric Drexler's book, Engines of Creation, The Coming Era of Nanotechnology, appeared in bookstores. He proposed a nanoassembler or microscopic computer capable of self-replication. He also coined the term gray goo, a nightmarish scenario of nanotechnology in which out-of-control, self-replicating nanobots destroy the biosphere by endlessly producing replicas of themselves and feeding on materials necessary for life. Here's some odd information about Eric Drexler. He worked at NASA during the summers of 1975 and 76, while he was a student at MIT at age 20 and 21. He founded the field of molecular nanotechnology in 1979, inventing the name at age 24. He was only 31 when his book was published. His book was published in 1986, and it's been translated into several languages. Although Drexler is considered the founder of the field of nanotechnology because of his book, he did not originate the concept of nanotechnology. An American theoretical physicist named Richard Feynman introduced the concept in a talk he gave at Caltech in 1959 called There's Plenty of Room at the Bottom. In his talk, Feynman suggested that it should be possible to make nanoscale machines that arrange atoms the way we want. A December 7, 2018 article published in the Journal of Clinical Medicine titled Impact of Nanoparticles on Brain Health, an Up-to-Date Overview, describes the main routes of exposure to nanoparticles. The authors say that the toxicological effects on the health of living organisms are not completely known, and knowledge of the potential toxicities of nanoparticles on the different organ systems is crucial. The authors are most concerned about nanoparticles that can cross the blood-brain barrier. Their list of routes includes ingestion. Nanoparticles are used in the food industry for the development of taste, texture, and nutrient absorption, as well as food packaging. Inhalation. Nanoparticles are found in powders, suspensions, or sprays, as well as textiles, paints, cosmetics, water disinfectants, and food packaging. In the March 2020 podcast, I described nanoparticles used for surveillance called smart dust. I read this description, how smart dust is used, from a publication called Azo Nano, published for the nanotechnology community. Surveillance using smart dust includes nano-sized machines housing a range of sensors and wireless communication devices. Individually, they can float undetected in a room with other dust particles. Combining the information gathered from hundreds, thousands, or millions of these tiny specks can give a full report on what is occurring within an area, including sound and images. A September 6, 2019 article on a site called edtech.com titled Smart Dust, The Big Education Impact of IoT which stands for Internet of Things, smallest device, written by Doug Bonderud, describes the wireless array of sensor nodes in SmartUS that are used for on-demand intelligence. To read the full article, Google the title. The Wikipedia for SmartUS, the Wikipedia page for SmartUS says, concepts for SmartUS emerged from a workshop at RAND in 1992 and a series of DARPA ISAT studies in the mid-1990s due to the potential military applications of the technology. DARPA is an acronym that stands for the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. It is a research and development agency of the United States Department of Defense responsible for the development of emerging technologies for use by the military. ISAT is a DARPA advisory group that provides DARPA with assessments on the state of advanced information science and technology and how it relates to the U.S. Department of Defense. A Google search on the words nanoparticles, toxicology, and NIH turned up two studies describing the health risks of inhaled nanoparticles. The citations have been included in the show notes. Skin absorption is another route. The authors explain that the skin is lipophilic, that has the capacity to absorb both lipophilic and hydrophilic molecules through different routes, but they do not mention types of skin products that contain nanoparticles except for those used in biomedical applications. Injection. Nanoparticles can be injected through intravenous or intramuscular injection for diagnosis and therapeutics of various diseases. The article also contains alarming information about neurotoxic effects of different nanoparticles, including titanium oxide nanoparticles that are found in whitening toothpaste. Apparently, Toms of Maine is so concerned about consumers that learn about titanium oxide in their whitening toothpaste, they announce that their toothpaste does not contain nanoparticles. Iron oxide nanoparticles are found in continuous glucose monitoring systems such as the Freestyle Libre and Dexcom G6. These systems use nanotechnology to monitor blood glucose in patients with diabetes. The paper confirming that nanotechnology is used in these systems exists in a January 2015 article published in Nature magazine titled Managing Diabetes with Nanomedicine, Challenges and Opportunities, describing nanotechnology in the form of implantable continuous glucose monitoring sensors that enable real-time tracking of blood glucose levels. The article says that super paramagnetic iron oxide nanoparticles are used. The Brain Health article that I mentioned includes a chart labeled Table 1 describing neurotoxic effects of iron oxide nanoparticles, including affected synaptic transmissions and nerve conduction, neural inflammation, apoptosis, induced neural antioxidant responses, and immune cell infiltration. Silver nanoparticles are found increasingly in a wide range of products on U.S. shelves, including electric shavers, athletic clothing, bed and bath linens, cosmetics, baby bottles, stuffed animals, keyboards, paints, and food containers. It is also used in hospital equipment, including catheters, stents, bandages, and wound dressings. Gold nanoparticles are used in a variety of cosmeceutical products such as cream, lotion, face packs, deodorant, and anti-aging creams. Silica nanoparticles are used in lipsticks. Carbon nanotubes are used in vaccine delivery. To read the article, Google Impact of Nanoparticles on Brain Health, NIH. A January 2019 article published in a journal called Nanomedicine titled Nanopharmaceuticals and Nanomedicines Currently on the Market, Challenges and Opportunities, describes the global nanomedicine market size. The authors write, nanopharmaceuticals generally have a high added value compared with traditional pharmaceuticals. This, combined with a variable and often contradictory definition of exactly what constitutes nanotechnology and nanopharmaceuticals in different countries and varying assessments by scientific and regulatory authorities, make it hard to estimate accurate data on the global nanomedicine market size. In one report, the total market size for nanomedicine in 2015 was expected to be about $1 trillion. With the progressive growth of some nanopharmaceuticals and the ever-increasing need for more efficient medicines for treating cancer, immune, and nervous system diseases, as well as mitigating infectious diseases such as AIDS, the worldwide marketplace is expected to show a compound annual growth rate of 22% in the life sciences as a whole. Continuing medical education for doctors is called CME training, and I wondered if there is CME training in nanomedicine offered around the country. Many states require medical professionals to take CME classes to maintain a license with a total annual course credit hour requirement. For example, California requires physicians to complete at least 50 hours of approved CME during each biennial cycle or when licenses are renewed. For example, a CME class might consist of a six-hour class organized at a hotel offering 3 credits. When I Googled, is there CME training for nanomedicine, the links returned, including one international conference and a few full-length educational programs not suitable for most doctors. I've included a list in the show notes. An article titled Five Top Nanotechnology Startups Impacting the Pharma Sector that was published on a data science site called Stardus identified the nanotechnology firms in a survey of 188. I have provided a list that can be found in the show notes. What stands out in the list is the absence of nano divisions of any large pharmaceutical companies. Pfizer's COVID-19 nanovaccine is in a photo on the cover of the show notes. To produce the vaccine, Pfizer partnered with a German company called BioNTech. In last month's podcast about ancient nanotechnology, I mentioned that a September 29, 2020 article that appeared in the New York Times, written by a writer named Henry Fountain, provided a clue about the temperature requirement for plasma fusion reactors used for nanosynthesis. Even though nanosynthesis is accomplished at lower temperatures, Henry's article says fusion requires temperatures of tens of millions of degrees to release energy. If fusion reactors are required for nanosynthesis, there is a mystery surrounding the manufacturing of COVID-19 nanovaccines. Where are they manufactured? The PPPL news page mentions two other large fusion reactors in the world. One is in Germany and the other is in southern France. I could not find any clues that the nanosynthesis required for manufacturing COVID-19 nanovaccines is taking place at any of the fusion reactors.
Well, Mary Jo, I think before it's almost time to go, unfortunately, I'd like to tell the audience that if they have any questions or comments for either you or myself, they're certainly welcome, very welcome to do that. My email address can be the way to do that, which is NICKNYNY1 mary.jo@gmail.com, and we'd be very happy to take your comments or questions. Mary Jo, that's amazing research. Hercules, how much time do we have left?
You have maybe like 5 minutes.
Oh, this?
About 5 minutes. Yeah, it goes real fast. Mary Jo, I had no concept of the scope of the nanotechnology, and you blew me away, especially with the fine, was it Smart Dust you mentioned? Was that the name of it?
Yes, Smart Dust, yeah.
That technology absolutely is something that you see in a sci-fi movie of the future,
yes.
And it's here. I mean, that is the good news and the bad news. Would you agree?
Yes, and the idea that they worked on it in 1992 is also pretty shocking also.
That blew me away, that date way back then, and that they were on this then. So here we are in 2021. What in the world is now going on? I mean, it just boggles the mind. Absolutely does.
Well, it certainly shows that we must be under extreme surveillance.
I would say absolutely true. And it's new technologies. Who would even think to look in those directions? But obviously that those are places that could be huge leaks. And I wonder how many people in the world in highly secured environments really know about this technology. That would be a good question.
I don't think they do. You're right. It sounds like it feels or sounds like science fiction.
Boy, does it ever. Does it ever. Wow. That was an exciting a bit of research. Mary Jo, again, thank you so much. You are the best.
Oh, thank you.
You really are.
Thank
you. You deserve to hear that. All right, then what we need to do then is go to our closing. So I'm going to go ahead and start that. So here we go. Again, this is Nick Curto.
And Mary Jo Fahey for Connecting the Dots, wishing you all an enlightening journey.
As you connect the dots to seek truth.
Till next time, keep informed, stay healthy and safe.
And be very, very kind to one another.
Goodbye for now.
Goodbye for now. Take good care, everybody. Much love to you all.
You too. Thank you very much, Nick. Thank you very much, Mary Jo. Another outstanding episode in the series. Thanks to everybody who listened in, whether you called in, whether you hooked up to us online, or whether you'll be checking us out later on demand. Until next time, this is all of us wishing all of you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. We're going to close with If You Can Dream by Virginia Ackley. Thanks again, Mary Jo.
If you can dream, if you can fly, then your heart can touch the sky, but only if you can dream. If love is true and love is real, pain and sorrow soon will heal, but only if you can dream. Dream till you wake. Dream till you feel. Dream till you know it. Dream till it's real. If you can dream, then you can be bound by love and yet be free, but only if you can dream. When love and trust are deep and fair, There is nothing your heart won't dare, but only if you can dream.